you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes. With me, Peter Donahue, godfather of golf. Pete, welcome back. It's great to be here.
Andy, thank you very much. Yes, we haven't talked since you and I and Henry and Lisa Way went to Sweetens Cove.
I am really eager to hear your thoughts about the course and about the trip. First, I was asked recently, when did you get called the godfather of golf for the first time? Do you know?
No. I know
this question makes you uncomfortable, so get it out.
No, I don't. Right. I don't. It just, yes, suddenly, I mean, it was, it's always been funny hear that. And
I think it had to be Chris in a group text to our group, and then I called you that on the podcast.
That's my guess. Well, you know,
maybe
what?
It was sooner than that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, that sounds plausible. I don't know, but you know, I mean, yeah, it's always funny every time I hear it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So Sweetens Cove is a 9-hole course in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee that was recently, maybe within the last 15 years, kind of redone and redeveloped by Rob Collins and some other people. And the course's kind of defining features is that it has really big, massive, like pushed up greens. There's two pins in each hole. There's two pin locations on each green. They don't do tee times. They just sell all day passes to a small amount of people, and those passes kind of sell out. They put them up in November, and they sell out in 15 minutes for the entire year. So it's a pretty tough place to go. But we had the opportunity to go with one of our students, Henry Way, who got an invitation to go, and so we said yes. We're coming. So what was your relationship with the course before this time? What did you know about it?
Well, I think when it was being built, and I think you probably had turned me on to it, but I started to look at the pictures and imagine playing there and thought, you know, how wonderful. I love the land down in Tennessee and Kentucky and in that region of the country. And so I thought it would be great. And then what I found out was, you know, total frustration. Like, there was no chance that you could get on it. And at least that's what it seemed. And so, so at any rate, I was just filled with curiosity and openness prior to that.
Yeah. So, it's a pretty popular course on like Instagram, and the pictures are, you know, people do lots of pictures and stuff, and it's a trendy place to go. They have good, you know, good merch in the shop, as we found.
Yep.
And so maybe should we just talk about the trip from beginning to end?
Well, I think so. You know, yeah. I mean, it was, yes, I think so.
So let's start with the assortment of clubs that you brought, because we put our clubs in the same thing.
Same
so
bag.
You got your clubs, and I've never seen a single bag carrying as wide array of clubs as you put in that. So what do you remember about what you brought? What was the thought process? There were lefty clubs, there were righty clubs, there were modern clubs, there were hickory clubs, there were modern hickory clubs, and there were ancient, you know, 100-year-old hickory clubs. One driver.
Well, I brought the Croydon Brassey because it's my oldest hickory friend, and I also brought a. I also brought a right-handed modern metal 7-wood, which is really, you know, if I were to take a club out, that you would say, you know, would you play golf with one club? It would be my, that seven wood, that old Nike seven wood. And so then there were, I forget the, I'm trying to think whether I brought, and you, as you say, you probably looked at it more than, or remember it more than I do, but I was thinking I might have brought a lefty wood, but maybe not. I brought my, I think five iron, lefty ping five iron. And then I carried, you know, like you say, I carried mostly the hickories, your hickories. Yeah. You know, Tadmore. I mean a selection
yeah, the Tadmore
of them.
Ones, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Tadmore ones, because they're substantial. And I, you know, I feel good about, you know, holding them and swinging them and not having them, you know, razor thin, gouging the ground and sticking and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, and I think I brought, you know, lofted clubs from either side, like a lefty-righty sand wedge or something like that. And, yeah, and of course, you know, well, never mind. That's what I brought. How about you?
Yeah, I went with the hickory. I had six or seven hickory clubs, yeah. Which is just my norm. That's becoming my set.
Yes.
I don't, after this, I mean, I hit so many good drives and have been hitting so many good drives with this hickory three wood. I don't want to switch to anything else.
Boy, you'd
for
really,
performance yeah. reasons, not even like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know it. You really did. I mean, you certainly did down there.
Yeah. So most people, they just have their set of clubs and they go from there. For us, we decide between maybe hickory or modern, but then you're also deciding between hickory and modern and then right-handed or left-handed. It's just a fun place that you've got to.
Truly. I mean, I really felt that way going down there, that there was this, sense of freedom, you know, about what might be possible. I mean, I think steered me because I had been thinking prior to going down there that I would just go down with modern lefties.
Okay.
And my modern lefty set always has one or two right-handed clubs just in case I get up against a tree or something like that. Or standing funny in relation to the edge of a bunker, but then you know you had you clued me in on the fact that we'd be meeting some people down there that would be playing hickory, mm-hmm. and that Henry was considering hickory, and so I thought, well, you know, that changes the ball game for me. So it became completely eclectic as far as the selection, mm-hmm. and really sort of spontaneous. It was really like, you know, Zen flower arranging in reverse. You know, it was really not all that studied. It was really just like seat of the pants.
Sure. Yeah, so we got down there on a Thursday. Was it a Thursday? Yeah, Thursday afternoon, and headed right out to the course. There were groups out there, but there was room for us, so we went out and played. You, Henry, and I. What were your impressions of the course in that first day, your first time around it?
Well, you know, we followed an eightsome.
Yeah, that first round. Yeah,
the eightsome. Eightsome was in front of us, and so right away you're thrown into a gear, you know, of expectation about, okay, well, if I thought this was going to be a 45-minute walk, it's not.
Sure.
And right from the get-go, you know, just looking out over the field, mm-hmm. which is totally in your view because you're in. What I think is the highest spot on the mm-hmm. property, and so it's the whole view is just, that's one of the things they did when they renovated it, was they knocked a whole bunch of trees down so that you'd have this sense of the wholeness of mm-hmm. the property, which was very, very striking. And then the presentation of the first hole is a par five with a bunker, big bunker right off the tee with, you know, with me without a yardage rangefinder, but you guys could clearly reach that thing. And I think, you know, it's first of all, it looks wide open, except there's this massive bunker in the center of the fairway. And now you're talking also, as far as the look of the golf course, you're talking about dormant Bermuda, and so the golf course is completely brown in its turf, with the exceptions where the greens were sort of green.
Yeah, but they were dried out. Yeah,
they were really dried out.
Really dry, but yeah. They were green. Yeah.
Yeah. So at any rate, I just, you know, I was struck by the, you know, the slopes up by the greens, the backboards, you know, where you could you know, actually hit the ball away from the flag and have it roll up and roll back, you know, and you could see that right away, that the greens were just going to be fantastic targets, very challenging. And yet, once you learn them, you know, some of them gettable.
Sure, yeah, yeah. So there's the greens were very, very, very fast. I think it had to do with how dry it was. And, like, the time of year, so, like, there wasn't tons of, like, grass wasn't, like, growing a lot.
Right.
So it was when, like, the pros complain about, like, greens getting, like, crunchy. You know, that's kind of what it was like walking on it.
Yeah.
Which some of the putts, specifically, like, down the hill, it's almost like if you hit it the right speed, it kind of wouldn't hold its line. But if you hit it enough to hold its line, it's going to be like 15 feet past the hole.
So truly.
It's like, it was a really challenging way to, or just a different way to play golf than I'd ever had before. I'd never seen anything that fast.
I agree. It was, you know, yes, I think to make putts out there was really, seemed to be unlikely. You know, I mean, as far as like going around and you think you're going to two putt all over the place,
yeah.
No, you weren't going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you had a putt famously on the, I think it was maybe the last nine we played, which I was standing at a right angle to your putt. So I saw that it was like an 8 foot or something like that putt that looked like yardage wise, it was a birdie putt, right? And I think you hit it. If we were going to say, you know, Stan Utley distinguished for us, you know, that there are three distinct phases of a putt, the acceleration phase, the cruising phase, and then the deceleration phase. Well, I think the acceleration phase for your putt was about, I don't know, 2.5 inches or something like that. And then it just started going down this slope. And then it didn't look like there was much of a slope once it hit the flat, but nothing seemed to stop it. It just kept going past the hole and didn't stop until I think it got at least as far away from the hole on the other side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was no chance. You had no chance on that putt. It was in the hole or gonzo.
Yeah. Have you ever played a course like that? Did it remind you of anything else?
It reminded me of Augusta.
Okay.
Yeah, Augusta is that kind of speed, very, very, you know, very, very crisp edges, so nothing falls in, you know.
Sure.
I mean, it's got to be perfect if it's on the edge, otherwise it's slipping out, and at Augusta, and also it cruises like that as well. You never feel comfortable, you know, and you could see, you know, if you're watching the Masters, I'm just, what pops into my mind right now is Tyrrell Hatton. You know, he's on a birdie run on the back nine at Augusta, and then he gets to 17. He hits it in the perfect spot. It ends up 3 feet from the hole, and then the putt he has swings so hard from right to left that he really has no chance of making it.
Sure.
But at any rate, I thought the greens were fantastic. They were really kind of what I dream about in terms of like greens that are endlessly interesting. And you know, we know that the greens that we've created here in the Cube are that kind of experience. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, including the guy, Don Snelton, who built the green, kept shaking his head and saying, no, this is too much.
Sure.
This is this pitch is too much. You know, the ball isn't going to stop. It's going to go past the hole and go way far. Well, I find that, you know, that people who are robust golfers mm-hmm. are endlessly challenged mm-hmm. by that kind of a circumstance and would just keep hitting them,
sure.
rather than get bored and walk mm-hmm. away.
Yeah, so the greens are very like pushed up and like elevated, and then almost like similar to Lasonia of like how high it is, but the edges are much more round.
Yes,
and then there's no rough around the edge, so it's like balls were constantly like rolling off the green, in like you thought it was a good shot, but then it's like oh no, it's not. And so
yeah,
there was just like a different. Almost a different cadence to hitting shots that otherwise would be pretty easy. Mm-hmm. You know, like 100. If you're even 100 yards out, middle of the fairway, there's no wind, the pin is in just a normal spot, and people would hit a shot, like, oh, good shot. And then you'd hear, stop. And then it's like, no, it's not stopped. So, like, someone hit it to what should have been, or at a different place would have been 10 feet. Now it's off the green. And now, from there, it's equally as challenging, right? You're constantly chipping or putting or figuring out what to do from just off the green, and it's you don't even know if you'll be able to keep it on the green.
No,
right? Like there's no other. I've never played a course like that where one the slightest miss is punished a lot, and then from there, you're not even really thinking about trying to get up and down. You're just like, can I hit this on the green? And make a, you know, make a four or five.
You know, truly, you know, if I'm, you know, thinking back to the weekend in the Masters, I mean, it's the same situation. You know,
sure.
You see, you know, when they get to 17 where that flag was on the right side of the green on, mm-hmm. on what amounts to a dome, they've got to hit it to the left of the hole approaching it because anything to the right is round and is going to fall off.
Yeah.
But, you know, and when they hit putts from the left mm-hmm. going towards that side of the green, you know, they're nervous about the ball cruising to a point where it's going to run 40 yards away down the hill. You know, so it's a very, very, you know, if Pete Dye said, hey, listen, you know, what you got to be able to do to the greatest players in the world is put some fear into them. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, McKenzie and Jones mm-hmm. clearly yeah. did that.
Sure.
I mean, there are, you know, everything seems to be like this sort of dome situation where if you do hit it in just the right point on the arch going uphill or downhill, the ball will feed.
Yeah.
But if you miss it, if you miss that spot, yeah. it's going to feed to a bad or a long place, long, yeah. challenging shot.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Did you have any favorite holes or anything stand out to you?
You know, I really enjoyed every single hole out there. I have to say that. You know, I think that the more that I played the holes, mm-hmm. you know, the more that I could see in them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you play to that position. The light blue flag, you know, going around the first time, and then the dark blue flag was, I think, usually harder.
Yeah.
And so you get a chance to see, you know, in an 18-hole round, you get a chance to see the green from two different perspectives, which I think is just wonderful. And then, you know, again, I believe that they just knocked it out of the park in terms of making – each hole something that was an interesting challenge.
Yeah,
and
it was, I mean, definitely an interesting challenge and much more unique than holes we have around here and using, like, the same amount of land, right? It's not like this isn't the Scotland Links, right, that was like, oh, you could never recreate this anywhere else. Like, oh, this actually could be, you could create versions of this anywhere you want.
Definitely.
Hole one, you said it's a par five with big bunker in the middle, but then there's also another massive bunker like in the center right up by the green, which is definitely like very much in play if you're going to try to like go for the green in two as opposed to most par fives, which just have a green, you know, the bunkers are on the side. Hole two was a shorter par four with like a center, little center bunker that...
A pot bunker.
Someone hit in it every time we played.
Henry did a couple of times, and the other guys did too.
Yeah, and but the green has a like a, really like a almost like a bowl, like a punch bowl thing in the front, where like if you hit it right, the ball will come down to a foot. But if not, you know, you have a putt that you probably might not even hit on the green.
Well, the putt, you know, that particular punch bowl or thumbprint or whatever you want to call it. You know, being right in the front, most of our balls, would go up beyond it. Yeah. And then, you know, as we saw in the very last round we played when we played with the guys. With
Kevin and Tyler. Yeah, we can.
Kevin and Tyler, yeah. And Jim. And Jim, they hit some, you know, some putts that were incredibly imaginative. I mean, going from guys on the right side of the bowl on the ledge going down and elects to play 90 degrees to the right to putt it over to a spot about the same on the other side of the bowl and then have it feed
down. Come back towards them almost.
Come back towards them. Yeah. That was just really remarkably imaginative to even and it was collaborative because everybody was looking at it and giving their 2 cents and I think Tyler was hitting it and he hit it just the right speed. It was a wonderful and it's so much fun to watch. And you saw the same thing the other day at Augusta where I forget who it was, but they're above the flag and they putt the ball at least a 45-degree angle, away from the hole and have it go up and then, you know, bank off the hill and trickle back down. So very, very, very fun to puzzles to try to figure out.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a certain amount of memory from your experience, and then there's a certain amount of imagination. I mean, it's the definition of extrapolation, you know. I mean, it's using those two functions of your brain to figure it out and then, you know, hit it solid, you know. And I just think it was and it was so wonderful because, you know, you got a chance to look at and evaluate different strategies of playing, you know, from these positions.
Yeah, hole three was another par five, but the green was really, really narrow and really wide. And that
shallow and wide.
Thank you. Yeah. And that was a that green was maybe the most challenging green.
Very.
There's a tree in the center of the
approach
and the approach. Yep. That so one pin was on the left side, one was on the right side, but it was pretty tough to get it on. Hole four is par three. The green, I think they said it was 17,000 square feet, which is somehow bigger than the golf our facility. I can't quite.
It really, you know,
hearing that doesn't quite make sense. But I think so. It could have played. There was like a front pin location that they weren't using, so it could have played from like 100 yards to 180 yards. But the pin locations that it was in were really hard. I don't think I made a par on that one of six. Played it six times, no pars.
I hit the ball on that hole every time I played it. I hit it good, and I managed to keep the ball on the green one time.
Yeah,
it really was. But you know, and what it did for me was it really redefined the idea of a good shot. Because
here you are,
before the shot, you know, sizing it up, you know, using your brain to pick out a line and to, you know, pick out a club and pick out a shot that you want to hit, high, low, curving this way or that way. And then you'd make an attempt. And if you hit it, you know, and you hit it the way you wanted, that's what I call a good shot. Yeah. Now, if instead you're measuring it by where it ends up, well, then, you know, that's a different point of view.
Mm.
And you could see that. At least I could feel in young Henry Way's, 14-year-old Henry Way's body language, that his measurement all had to do with the outcome of the ball. He didn't seem to give himself any credit for nipping it good. Sure. And almost getting it.
It's a hard one, though. I wouldn't have been able to, you know.
Yeah, it is a hard one.
Either. It's a hard place to get to. He hit the ball really good.
He was terrific. Yeah. I mean, just in terms of, you know, here's a young man, you know, going, playing with men.
Sure.
Playing with adults. Yeah. And not only that, playing with adults, you guys, you and Kevin and Tyler, that just knocked the bejesus out of it. I mean, Kevin is a green superintendent now.
Tyler, from New Orleans.
A free swinger and just knocked the daylights out of it. And Henry would get up there and not jump out of his shoes. He'd just put his move on it and knock it right down the center of the fairway. He was fabulous.
Yeah.
Keep going with the whole description.
With drivable par four with kind of a big bunker on the right and a little bunker on the left that you'd kind of hit up the left side and have a challenging chip up the hill. Also, you could hit it kind of into the bunker and kind of chunk one out and have it run down. So that was lots
Yeah,
of
or you could
there.
Use the backboard yeah. and back yeah, of the yeah. green,
yeah.
you know, and knock it really away and have mm-hmm. it feed back. I mean, it was Kevin had mentioned that, I think, in the last nine that we played and kind of, you know, opened that possibility up for me. Yeah, the drivableness of, you know, that hole and then the mm-hmm. seventh.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, so then six was the par four around the water.
Yeah.
Which is maybe the most, like, I guess the green is pretty crazy, but, like, that hole is, like, a hole we've seen other places. But I still, that was one of my favorite holes
to play.
I just really like the drive and how the you kind of hit these trees and draw it off them. Like, water, like, sort of in play, but not really. You know, there's plenty of room. You know, it wasn't like one of those holes with water up the left side where you just feel, like, trapped by it. I felt like I could do some things.
Well, and you did. And Jim and the other guys who played there at different times of year assured us that when the turf, you know, summers up, that lake becomes an irresistible magnet.
Keeps rolling.
The ball just keeps rolling. Yeah. And even if you think you've got, it's kind of like 11 at Augusta, you know, where that they've got the pond up by the green, and you saw those guys get there, and you think, geez, there's so much room to the right. You know, why wouldn't they put their miss there? But they, you know, they think they've got a good shot for it, and then it overhooks and it catches the slope, and bye bye.
Yeah. Hole seven, somewhat drivable. Par four, I don't think anyone. Oh, I drove it once when we played up a tee.
Yeah.
But that was one where, like, the green was just, like, so challenging. So Henry and I were, like, playing a match, and we both had, like, we both had 4 feet for par. And I think we ended up tying with sixes. Do you remember, like, back and forth?
Yes,
because it was just on that, and it was so just like so fast. We didn't even hit bad putts. It's just what happened.
It's just what happened. Exactly. Yeah, you guys would just knock the ball into you know, and now let's go to eight. Yeah.
Eight par four with like a Biarritz green, which is like has a big like almost like a. Like a skateboarding half pipe in the middle, but it was like slanted. Usually they're straight away. That's kind of like a template hole. And but like the two ledges that the pin were on made it real. The right one was a little bit easier. The left one, I don't know the way to even like get it there. We played it three times. the first day, three times the second day, and then we had other people in the group. I think Henry's the only one who made a par to the left hole. So we played a lot of times, and he's the only one to do it. So it was a pretty – that's a crazy one.
Well, you know, I sat out while you guys played, the 27 yeah. holes on each of the days. And, you know, I remember when you guys went out on that first day, and yeah. I stayed up by the pine tree and sipped a little Tennessee bourbon and was reading my book and yeah. watching golfers. And I watched you guys, and Lisa, Henry's mother, came out, yeah. and we were sitting there, and we watched you guys on eight. And both of you drove it down to places where you, like, had 30 or 40 yards mm-hmm. to the left-hand pin, and then we looked at where you were after that. You were farther away for your next shot than you were.
Yeah, that one, I think you have to be back a little bit. Like, driving up close, it's almost too hard to try to get it to stay up there. You had to be, you know, almost like 80 to 100 yards. But even then, you have like a 2-foot circle that you probably can land it in to keep it on the green. Anything short rolls back. Anything like almost hitting to the hole is just, at least on that day we were playing it,
definitely,
you know, no chance. So
yeah, there was a little, you're, as you say, there was a little, like, you might have been able to spread a picnic blanket out, you know, just to the right of the flag, yeah. a little beyond it. That was the only place yeah. you could, it would stop.
Which is crazy from eight, you know, any other place, 80, 90, you just feel, you're totally comfortable yeah. hitting that shot.
Yeah.
But here, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. No chance. So, hole nine is a par three, relatively short. It was kind of a fun one where, like, there's lots of slope to the green, so you often, like, would aim it, like, 30 feet to the right of the pin, and then the ball kind of disappears, and then you walk up, and you see, like, who was closer. And
yeah, it rolls was, yeah. up. There's a big – it's the green sits against a hill, mm-hmm. and they use the right side to, have the green crawl up this hill. So it provides, a backboard that if you're a little to the right, it will repel your ball and push it off the green back into the yeah. fairway. And if it's to the left, it'll feed it back down. But then it will not necessarily stay on that. The right-hand part of the green is an upper level, and then there's a little fall-off.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole drama is, will the ball stay where it belongs, or will it take the slopes and end up, you know, way down sure. in the corner and maybe even off the green?
Yeah. So that's the second – that's every hole, right? Yep, all nine.
Yeah, that's
the putting green. You want to talk about the putting green?
Oh, my God. The Himalayas, that's an apt name for it. I've never seen Himalayas more Himalayas.
But it's different, though, because you're hitting the – it's massive, biggest thing I've ever seen, so much slope. And you could just hit these shots. You could hit a putt that would probably take – it would probably roll along the ground for 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah,
exactly. And it could come back to your feet. Yeah. like yeah. in a yeah. circle, yeah. you know, from multiple directions. So that was a pretty
yeah. Yeah.
cool thing.
It's yeah. it's a great warm up because yeah. it really starts to tune your imagination up yeah. in your mind. And you know, it might set you back a little bit because, you know, you can hit this putt and it'll just come back to you, and you can hit it again and it'll come back to you, and you start thinking, well, how long is it going to take for me to learn
yeah, how to do this?
But again, with the right frame of mind, I think endlessly fun
yeah.
and you know, forever challenging. And that was, you know, the you know, when you get around to it, I'd love to talk about, you know, the next morning.
Yeah, we all. Yeah. So the next morning we got there at 9 o'clock, which is when everyone gets there.
Yeah.
And the first day was just you, me, and Henry. And the second day, a couple of, I think Kevin Moore is one of Jason's friends,
yep.
and Tyler Lenz is the greenskeeper you spoke about briefly. They've been around at Sweetens Cove for like a really long time, so they have, you know, since kind of the beginning, and are friends with the owner and know Jason Way, them. And then I knew that Kevin was going to play with us. I didn't know Tyler. And then Jim Hartzell, who is an author who wrote a book about Sweetens Cove and Scotland, and he's a podcaster, and he has videos with No Laying Up. I know his books and I know his like work, and he showed up and he's like, "Can I join you guys?" So so that was a fun, you know, that was a fun surprise, because I've messaged with him like over Instagram like before I went to Scotland, just asking about a couple courses to go to, because he likes the small, you know, the off the beaten path kind of 9-hole, 12-hole courses. So I was just asking like, you know, what was worth it and stuff like that. And
he's the guy to responded. Ask.
And so, he joined us for 9 holes. And
isn't that funny? I mean, I saw this guy when we were walking over there, standing under a tree off the 9th green, and kind of a heavy set guy with a beard. And I thought, I wonder what he's doing here, you know? And then he ends up being one of our mates, you know, and it was just terrific. Well, I just loved the opening bell, you know, and how that's done, you know, 40 people surrounding the shed, which is their pro shop. Mm-hmm. And it is a shed. You know, it's in the story of the golf course, you know, they were going to have media day there, and they were hoping that they were going to get significant media, and they were lacking a clubhouse. And so they, you know, driving down the road, driving past the local shed rental place, Rob or Moore or Collins or someone, you know, stopped and said, "Give me the biggest shed you got." And so they, you know, they call it the shed, you know, that's how it's known. And Matt, is that the manager's name?
Yeah, Damski.
He comes out onto the wood porch and he's standing up there. It serves as his platform, and he's above us, and he reads the gospel. This is how we do golf here at Sweetens Cove. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a wonderful starter's approach. Yeah. You know, it's a great way to get everybody ready to enjoy the golf.
He did a few things, and he said he talked about how like you're allowed to play as a big group. If you have 8 people, you can play as 8. You don't have to, but you can play. He's like, probably the only course that'll ever let you do that is that one. So they took pride in that. And other than the first 9 that we played, we never really got held up by a big group.
No.
So it wasn't, no issues with, you would think, oh, it's going to be so slow out there if they have groups of 8, but no, it moves.
No, you're right. No, man. I don't remember ever, having an issue with that. And they certainly don't expect that to happen. I mean, they basically, you know, address you and Matt rather than saying, you know, hey, we're adults.
Yeah. But he also said like there's no, I think it's due to the fact that you can just play there all day. It's like you don't you don't play through it. Like if someone's slowing you down, just go to a different hole and play, right. Which is great, right. Which is maybe that's how it works. And so, like, it was, so that was great. He's described putting as, he akined it to being more like air hockey than, you know, what you'd come to expect for putting, which of just like the way that the ball does, you know, the way a puck slides across the air hockey table was somewhat similar to how the balls would putt. And then he said, he said, no one cares what what you're going to shoot, your score out there. And he, I think he said like, even if you shoot the course, he's like, we don't update the course record anymore, because I think when they have 2 flags in it, it's not like you know the handicap thing. I think it's not even like an official score, so you can't even do it. But they like that, and because they're like it was designed to kind of be a match play course, and this is that's what the guys thought was the best way to do golf, and so that's how it was designed. So don't even bother. And I think that great. Was, it's like you had to have that perspective or else you wouldn't, your experience would be, I think, tainted a little bit.
Oh, gosh, definitely. Of all the things, you know, that we've talked about yeah. over the years yeah. relating to, you know, the Americanized golf
sure.
that we've been taught and mm-hmm. conditioned to expect,
yeah.
and our minds just automatically go there,
yeah.
you know, to free yourself of that score dependence as in terms of measuring your satisfaction of the day
sure.
is like shaking,
yeah.
you know. I mean, and it's either shakes it in a way that you absolutely enjoy,
yeah.
or it doesn't. And I mean, for instance, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And we equalize, you know, throughout the day, change the golf course and equalize the matches in ways that were completely fluid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the beginning round, like you guys were giving me a stroke and letting me tee off from a forward tee of you mm-hmm. and Henry. But by the end of the day, I was just... We were playing teams,
yeah.
And I was just playing, you know, playing from the same tees with with a stroke,
yeah.
you know, and so, you know, that's part of the you know, in the afternoon, or I should say, in the second round that we played on the second day,
yeah.
I sat out that one, and you four guys played, and you played from the forward tees,
mm-hmm.
which is a tremendous. Opportunity, because now you know the green becomes your target on a lot of these holes, which really is a different experience.
Yeah, we play. That was the game. I think Kevin said he's like, if whoever wins the hole, you get to choose the tees, and so
nice.
We often choose up the tees. But I'm gonna want to start doing that more often when we play. I did that at Sunset Valley, or no, I didn't do it at Sunset Valley, but I played the front tees in a playing lesson last week, and hole three becomes like a dogleg right around a tree as opposed to kind of a straightaway hole. You know, so it's just like interesting to see the course and to start thinking about that with other courses.
Oh, gosh. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's just brilliant yeah. because, you know, I had an experience of that somewhat, you know, down in Mountain Lake in Florida. I played the golf pro down there has on Saturday afternoon, he mm-hmm. has a game, and
yeah.
everybody, you know, can come, and it's a Stableford game. And so based on your handicap, you get a quota,
sure.
and then you go. But the way the golf course gets set up is that the par fives are played from the far back as you can go. The par fours, many of them are from the blue or the next tee mm-hmm. up. But then the drivable holes are all played from the forward tees.
That's
where
fun.
Now
yeah.
the green, but you know, also all the bunkers and the out of bounds
yeah, sure.
that's up by the green. So that's in play too. So
yeah.
it's a lot like what makes the Masters so exciting, because there can be these, you know, feast or famine
mm-hmm.
situations, three shot swings and, you know,
yeah,
you know, and all that kind of stuff. So it was, you know, Sweetens is like a golf gym, you know, where you're just
yeah.
going in and you're using the land and the holes that are there, but also holes that aren't necessarily there, you know, as far as on the scorecard.
Sure.
They're just available for cross-country golf, or, you know,
yeah.
if you just start looking around saying, hey, let's try this shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys weren't able to do that
yeah.
because of the crowd that was out there that day, but, you know, conceptually,
yeah.
you know, if you can catch the moment, mm-hmm. it's...
Yeah, it would be cool. The course is so unique. Like, Henry and I tried to do that, and we ran out of space to do it, but, like, we didn't feel disappointed. It's kind of like the course itself is already so kind of like crazy and engaging, you
yeah.
know, that it's like, well, it actually wouldn't be that different going from hole one to hole three. You know, that's all.
Yeah.
You know, so which right. is you know, other courses would be.
Yes.
Change because all the challenges just like once you get up to the greens and what you can do around there. So, I really like the because we played in a group of was it six? It had to be six of us second day. That,
yeah.
And that last it's probably my favorite one. It was we definitely didn't play slow, but it was a great. Just like a good hangout, good camaraderie. Everyone, you just find someone to talk to, walk down the hole.
Yeah.
Hit some shots when you got there and keep moving.
Yeah. Oh, I really love that round, you know, and it was, I spent a lot of time with Jim Hartzell, in that round, getting to know him and, you know, we met him. He sat with us for lunch, and we identified at that point that he was the author that had written the story about the golf course, and he was signing the books I bought both of them.
Oh, yeah, you walked down. I was like, "Hey, Pete, this is Jim Hartzell. He's like," and you like look and you're like, "Oh, I think I just bought your book in the shed." Like,
yeah,
yeah.
And he's like,
"All right, I'll sign it for you.
Yeah, let me sign it for you." And so, and then we end up playing, and then I find out I'm thinking that this guy is just a writer.
Yeah.
And it ends up that he's an architect, and not just an architect. He's doing some big work at the universities of I think Alabama and Mississippi State, and they're doing some cool stuff. So in any case, he was a delightful guy to talk to. And in that last round, like you say, you know, we were, you know, just the opportunity to have so many people to have these conversations with, and then to, you know, step into a conversation that had been going on and kind of, you know, being brought up to date, was just fantastic. And you know, you asked me if I had favorite holes. Well, on that round of golf, I had favorite shots, because I really, you know, I was just playing that Hickory 5-wood pretty much from every place, I think, and man, I made a pass at a ball on the second hole that I just, you guys are hitting shorter clubs like wedges, and I'm hitting a 5-wood, but man, I pured this thing, and I hit it dead at the flag, and I ended up not making the putt, but it was just such a pleasure to make contact with that ball and have your body just feel of completely free to be athletic and, you know, with no worry about the face or angle of the club or anything like that. And I hit another one like that to end the round on 9, which ended up going into a bunker and, you know, then I
just off deep, right? That's like,
yeah. But, you know, just
you're hitting it. Yeah. Cause we switched. I remember that. Cause we switched up the clubs. I took the clubs out of your bag and gave you mine. And so you were confused by the numbers.
Yeah, that's right.
And I remember I remember I clubbed you on the first hole because you had like 120 or something, and I gave you the four, which is not actually it's a Hickory 4. So, but you hit it. I think parred. And you
birdied.
You birdied the first hole.
Yeah, I knocked it off the backstop.
Well, that's right.
Left,
it came back. Yeah.
And it fed back down to about, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet, and I managed to make it from there. And then I knocked it stiff on the second hole.
Yeah.
I thought, oh man, I'm gonna like light this up.
Well, you did. I mean, you kept golf. You played you definitely had if we had kept score, you'd had the best score of the group that last 9.
Sure. You know, and it was interesting.
You're hitting it
great. Because I'm, you know, I'm hitting long shots, but you know, at that point, you had, I think, helped me a lot by also putting in that bag that mallet putter.
Oh yeah,
which is a very solid putter.
Yeah,
and the putter that I was playing with earlier, the blade putter that I was playing with, is a very unsolid putter. So then I caught a knack for the ground, you know, and putted off, you know, the fairway up to the greens, and you know, and was able to navigate that pretty well. And so, yes, that was very, for so many different reasons. And I think, you know, Andy, I think that it was like, for me, it was kind of an opening of a portal, really, just the whole experience. I wasn't that much aware of it as it was happening, but I started to feel, you know, and the word that I that comes into my head every time I think about it is enriched by the experience of the people that were there, the connections that were made. You know, playing with Henry the way we were, it wasn't just a round that we were playing with Henry. We were spending the weekend with him.
Yeah, that's great.
And with Lisa and you know, so you know, you play golf with a guy enough, you know, you start to get him, you know, a little bit more, and you know, that's a wonderful experience. And then subsequently coming back and reading, you know, reading Jim's stories about the building of the golf course of Sweetens Cove, and then the story of his trip to Scotland after his son Jordan had died.
Yeah, the books are, it's called The Secret Home of Golf.
Yeah.
And When Revelation Comes.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah. Very, I mean, as a, you know, again, the stories were a lot about, you know, people connecting with each other, and the people in Scotland, you know, who really kind of knew what was going on with Jim and connected with him. And then this morning, listening to his podcast, which is called The Duffer's Literary Companion. And, he and a man named Stephen, you know, just talking about the history of the game as it's been recorded in literature and authors, and making referrals to books and stuff. It really, I hadn't ever really thought about broadening my enjoyment of the game by searching, you know, and reading books. I've read a lot of books, but not a lot of the books that they and the authors that they were talking about. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And listening to more of their podcasts. Yes. I just think they're rich experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Pete. I think
that's it.
Gonna wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you. It was a great trip. Hopefully we get on a few more.
I hope so too, Andy. Thank you. Before you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.